LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
There's been a specific process of recovery that is perhaps unique in my lifetime, right here in the state of Louisiana, right here in New Orleans. Well,
that's President Obama speaking yesterday at the Sanchez Community Center in New Orleans. August 29th marks the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina's arrival at the Gulf Coast. We're going to be looking back on that as well at this 10-year anniversary with Glenn Merritt here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc., especially in terms of disaster response. Why does the church need to be involved in these kind of disasters, helping, showing mercy, extending care, just as much as the government needs to be involved in those things? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., live this Friday afternoon, August the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Glenn Merritt will be our guest for the first few minutes. Then we're going to talk with Dr. Richard Weikart about the Darwinist roots of the Nazi worldview, in particular, the particular ethic of Adolf Hitler. You don't think of ethics in Adolf Hitler in the same breath very often, but he had an ethic, a deadly, a mortal kind of ethic, played itself out for a long time in Western Europe. We'll talk about all of that with Dr. Richard Weikart, professor of history at California State University and author of several books, including From Darwin to Hitler, Evolutionary Ethics, Eugenics, and Racism in Germany. Pastor Chris Roseborough will be our guest in the second hour of the program as we review This Week in Pop American Christianity. We'll talk about televangelists and the upcoming Shemitah Fall Jewish feasts and festivals. Why is it that these televangelists will readily observe Jewish festivals, but they don't have a lot of use for Christian ones? It's a good question. I'll ask Chris when we talk with him. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll play four soundbites for you. You vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Or go to our Facebook fan page. We've left space there for you to vote for the four soundbites, and your vote will decide which one will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, Glenn Merritt. He spent 9 years as Director of Disaster Response for LCMS World Relief and Human Care. Glenn, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you again, Todd.
I'm sure you have a lot of memories, but what's your most vivid memory of your work during Hurricane Katrina?
Well, I'd say the most vivid is when we first arrived there, and this would have been even like 60 days after the hurricane, to see the absolute total devastation, including at the airport itself. And then as we went through the various wards, seeing how there was nothing left. I'm surprised there was anything even to work with.
You have been all over the world and seen disasters of all kinds. How did the devastation after Katrina compare with the others you've seen?
Well, Hurricane Katrina was devastation on such a broad scale that it took a lot more effort to pull together the relief work that was being done by multiple agencies, including a number of church bodies. And because of that, and because of the distance that the hurricane spanned and the damage that it did on the Gulf Coast, and then even further inland, we keep forgetting about that, it was a very complicated response for everybody involved. And, of course, FEMA was behind the eight ball because of the delay in getting some aid in. And so it was very difficult, and transportation was difficult, lodging was difficult, food was difficult, not only for the people who lived there, certainly, but for those of us who were trying to help with the response.
So it sounds like the entire region was essentially paralyzed after the storm. Once you arrived there the first time, you went there many times, but once you arrived there the first time, what did you do next?
Well, after doing an initial assessment, we met together, and by we, Reverend Ray Wilkie of Orson Grain Train and Dan Baker, who at that time was the head of Laborers for Christ, and then, of course, President Kurt Schultz of the Southern District and his disaster response people, including Dave Buss and some others. And we sat down and discussed where we should proceed from here on. What was happening is so many congregations wanted to help and were trying to help, and so many individuals wanted to help and were trying to help. It was such a scattered effort that there was nothing united, and it wasn't making a substantial impact. So we met together there in New Orleans, and we made the decision that we would form two camps. There were already Lutheran disaster response camps there, but we made the decision that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod would build two camps, one of which became known as Camp Restore, and the other, that was in New Orleans East, and then the other, Camp Biloxi in Biloxi, Mississippi. And those camps turned out being the largest camps on the Gulf Coast and housed and took care of the largest number of volunteers and made such a great impact because it began to unite the effort rather than everybody not knowing what to do but wanting to do something. So it was a united effort by the members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
So talk about life in those camps. What was happening on a daily basis there?
Well, initially it was a pretty rudimentary life in the camps, and especially the original camp was in Metairie, and those were tents. And in Biloxi, they were tents. And anybody who's been on the Gulf Coast knows how miserable it can be. And then things like sanitation, things like water, even things like getting daily food. You know, when we were first setting up Camp Restore, the National Guard was still patrolling and enforcing. You could not be out at night. And so we had to scramble for all the things that we got. And when I say we, of course, I mean joint effort of particularly the Southern District and their disaster response people to get the things that were needed so the camps could actually house the number of volunteers that flowed through them, so the volunteers actually could get out and do the work and have the material and the tools and equipment needed to do the work in an organized manner.
Create, if you would, for us kind of a big timeline of how the work down there proceeded from your first efforts to when, and I'm sure that it in some sense even continues, but how did it proceed through the time that you were involved down there?
Well, I think that most people would agree, both from a governmental standpoint and also from a public standpoint, that initially, during the first 3 to 6 months, things proceeded very, very slowly. In fact, it seemed as if nothing was actually being accomplished there on the Gulf Coast at all, particularly in New Orleans, but also over in Waveland and Biloxi and other places. And then all of a sudden, as things got organized and some dollars flowed in, to be honest with you, things began to proceed a little bit better. Work was actually being done. You could see a difference, although if you go there even today, especially in the Ninth Ward and other places, it's amazing how much has not been done. But you could begin to see a difference. At least it was being cleaned up. At least the churches were being repaired. And at least the congregations were being supported in the work that they themselves were attempting to do there on the Gulf Coast. There was a resilience on the part of the people, but it was overwhelming, and they wanted to do something. Not only the people who lived there, but the people who didn't live there wanted to do something, but nobody knew exactly what to do and how to best use the resources. There is an image that stands out in my mind that will continue to stand out. And there was a church that was destroyed in the Ninth Ward. Trinity, I believe, was the name of the church. And it was really completely destroyed, although part of the structure was still standing. And this was early on, and I was down there, and I happened to be by myself that day. And I was in I walked into the structure, and there was an elderly lady, and quite elderly, and she had a broom, and she was trying to sweep this debris, mud, water. And this is 3 or 4 months after Katrina, mud, water. She was trying to sweep it up and clean it up because she wanted her church to come back. She wanted her church to be there. And as you looked around where that church was, you're going, it's impossible. None of this will ever come back. And yet that church is there today. Her dedication and that of other people allowed for the rebuilding of that church, and it's still there today.
So how would you describe what we learned from, in terms of disaster response, from Hurricane Katrina?
Well, certainly what we learned as a synod was that we have to do this in a unified way, that we can't do it hodgepodge and piecemeal, that by working together we can accomplish a whole lot more than by working independently. One of the things that often happens after a disaster is that everybody wants to help and everybody tries to help, and in their efforts to help, it can become overwhelming for the local church or even a local district in a disaster of the magnitude of Katrina. And so by giving a channel like disaster response, LCMS disaster response, we're able to focus on the needs that are there and have agreement with the districts, with the congregations, that we can channel this and we can have maximum effort by working together rather than working independently. And for the local congregations, after Katrina, there were so many people who sent clothes, who sent food, who sent even money. They honestly didn't know how to handle it or what to do with it all. There were piles and piles and piles of clothes and water and food that just really went to waste because the local congregations had no way to distribute it, no facility, and many of the members were gone. They couldn't live there. They were gone to Texas or elsewhere.
Finally, then, make the case for us, if you would, Glenn, that the church needs to be involved in this kind of stuff. It has a role, a vital role to play by way of mercy at a time of disaster. Make that case for us.
Well, I would say that our people are merciful people and they're generous people, and they want to reach out and touch the lives of others and also strengthen and encourage the local congregations as they reach out, because that's the touchstone in a community, is the local congregation. After all the disaster response agencies are there and gone, the local congregation still remains. And so I believe that the most important thing that we can do is to support the local congregation. How can we do that? Well, at times that's by the work of an organization like LCMS Disaster Response, which can channel all of the efforts, whether it's volunteers, whether it's funding, whether it's material goods, can channel all those efforts where they're needed the most so as not to overwhelm the local congregation. And at the same time, the local congregation, along with volunteers who come in to help during these times, can show the mercy of Christ and can proclaim the good news of the gospel. And there is hope. Even in the darkest of situations, like a Hurricane Katrina, there is hope. And that hope is found in Christ.
Glenn Merritt spent 9 years as Director of Disaster Response for the LCMS World Relief and Human Care. You can find out more about the great work of LCMS Disaster Response under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Or you can call toll-free 888-930-4438, 888-930-4438, LCMS Disaster Response. Glenn, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Darwinist roots of the Nazi worldview, answering the question, Hitler, obviously an evil man, was he an ethical man? We'll be right back. Dr. Richard Weikart will be our guest.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina, St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota, St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio, First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas, Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri, Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois, Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama, and Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.